Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org. Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and I am on my marine beat today. We'll be talking with Allie Redman, the aquarist at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. Allie first was a guest on Nature Now back in April 2017 when she talked about what an aquarist does. And then April 2018, she was back to talk about the renovations and the exhibit improvements at the Port Townsend Marine Science Aquarium. This year, Allie has brought an AmeriCorps member, Marley Loomis, and the two of them are going to take us behind the scenes to learn about the inner workings of the aquarium. But first, let's hear this week's mystery sound. So just a little hint. I am hearing this sound daily. Whenever I'm outdoors, and even sometimes indoors, around Port Townsend these days. Well, as we've been reporting on Nature Now for the past few weeks, spring is definitely on the way. The sights and sounds of spring are everywhere. First of the season sightings are coming in daily, and a male American goldfinch in Artemis Kelt's backyard, Rufus hummingbirds in many backyard feeding stations, including Debbie Yonke's and my own even, and wake robins or western trillium along the forested trails. This week, I want to add another slightly different kind of observation. It was a busy week for the Port Townsend Marine Science Center volunteers in the Marine Mammal Stranding Network. A wounded northern elephant seal was found by Steve Grace, south of Beckett Points. Steve and others have kept an eye on it to ensure that it would not be unintentionally harassed by humans. Ross Anderson took a crew out on his boat to find it closer to Beckett Point itself, where then Stephanie Warang and Mario Riviera went out to post Share the Shore signs to remind people to stay away from the wounded animal. Thanks to these volunteers that care for the well-being of our marine mammals. Now let's go on to my talk with Allie and Marley. I'm here today with Allie Redman, who's the aquarist at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center, and Marley Loomis, who is an AmeriCorps member. Welcome, Allie and Marley.
Hi, thanks for having us.
So, Marley, I want to ask you first, an AmeriCorps member, what does that really mean, and what is the AmeriCorps?
So, I am here with AmeriCorps as the aquarium educator, more specifically at the Marine Science Center. And AmeriCorps is an organization that works nationally to distribute a bunch of, it's like Peace Corps, but in the country.
So, how long are you going to be at the Marine Science Center?
My term is a 10.5-month term, so I started October 1st and then will be here in my position until August 15th. And then at that point, I have the option to add on a second term as well.
Oh.
Yeah, so there's a possibility that I might actually be sticking around for another 10.5-month term as well.
Oh, interesting. And tell me, did you study marine biology in school? Did you study environmental education? What got you to this?
I actually am from Colorado and grew up in the mountains all of my life and then studied ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Colorado. So I don't actually have any or have much previous experience in marine biology, but both my parents are divers and my whole family has vacationed.
So there's the marine connection.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Lots of vacations to the ocean.
So let's talk a bit about the aquarium. For listeners, the aquarium is coming out of its winter hibernation and is now open. So Allie, what are the hours now?
We are open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from noon until 5.
And then when do you go to your summer season?
We'll go to our summer season, which is open every day except for Tuesday after Memorial Day.
After Memorial Day. Okay. So let's talk about the winter at the aquarium. What goes on there during the winter? I know you're closed to the public, but what do you do?
One of the unique elements of working in a nearly historic building is that it's cold and it is damp and it doesn't have bathrooms.
And, yes, and in case anybody hasn't visited, this is a small wooden building at the end of the pier at Fort Worden.
Yeah, so we find that not many visitors or volunteers like to hang around in that kind of environment. It takes the slightly fanatical people like Marley and myself to be willing to put up with that for long hours. So we do close to visitors, but we stay really busy. Some of it is doing maintenance projects, doing different signage or different exhibits. We did a couple of really fun projects this winter. We worked on putting in a surge tank so that one of our tide pools now has this big whoosh.
So it has like wave action.
It has wave action.
Oh, fun.
And Marley also worked on a cool project putting together some phytoplankton.
Yeah, I have been working with a few different phytoplankton cultures to help feed our oysters and shellfish in the aquarium, specifically our Olympia oysters. And that was a very exciting project that has gotten up and running over the winter.
So you're still taking care of critters over the winter.
So yeah, and that's a large percentage of our time. It's just we're always still feeding and cleaning, feeding and cleaning. Mm-hmm. They require a little bit less care in the wintertime in that the cold water kind of slows things down. They eat a little bit less. Mm-hmm. And if you have less going in, you got less coming out.
How do you get the water? What's the water source?
So we have what is referred to as a open or flow through system. So we are pumping water from right underneath the pier and runs up through kind of a distribution tank in our attic and then down to the aquariums and from the aquariums back out into the ocean. And there is no filtration on this except for an intake screen. And I want Marley to tell you about the intake screens.
So underneath the pier where we have our intakes that bring the water in with the pump, we have to maintain them because there's barnacle growth and algae growth and mussel growth that accumulates. So one of the jobs that's mainly the AmeriCorps jobs is to suit up in a life vest and full body harness and trek down the pier, climb through a tiny little hole in the, like a little window sized hole in the back wall of the pump house, and then climb out on this little boardwalk system underneath the pier to
clipped into a safety line
of course, and then crank up the intakes and scrub the screens and blast them with some hose water that we drag down from up above to maintain them.
So I'm thinking about doing that during the winter time. That's how often do you have to do this?
Well, in the winter it's a little bit less intensive because there's less growth.
Yeah.
But for the most part we strive for once every 2 weeks.
Okay, the purpose of the intake screen is just to keep the big stuff, I suppose, yeah?
Keep the big stuff out. It's and to keep things from clogging up the pumps. I think it's one of the most exciting points in our interview process when we hire the AmeriCorps. We have just kind of a standard question in there that's like, are you comfortable working at heights over open water when clipped in to a safety line? And I always wonder kind of what are they imagining in advance before they get there? And does the reality... Does the reality come close to the expectation?
I imagined myself suspended on a boardwalk over a giant tank.
Oh.
I had no idea where I would think that tank would go, but that's what I pictured in the interview process.
So instead, here it's winter, it's stormy, the water's going up and down. What's it like during the winter storms out there?
It can get a little bit crazy. The wind can cause a lot of movement actually of the pier itself. So you can kind of see the water sloshing around in some of the tanks when the wind gets really bad.
I have a clipboard that has been hanging on the wall in the same location for several years. And I make little marks when the sway of the clipboard gets really extreme. Oh. So that I can compare. I'm like, oh, no, you think this is bad? This is not bad. Last year, the pencil mark was here. I always say, I'm going to get a pair of those giant googly eyes and put them out there and put a sign underneath that says, you know, if the eyes roll, it's time to leave the pier.
Well, I certainly can remember days where you really almost couldn't open the door.
Well, we do sometimes have challenges getting into the building the wind and with the cold. The snowstorms, with the bad snowstorms this year, we had some extra challenges of getting in. And one day we got ourselves down there, thanks to Marley's Colorado background. But we couldn't get into the building because all of the locks had frozen up. And we tried a couple of different doors to get in. And then in the end, we just stood next to one of the doors, like kind of taking turns breathing into the lock.
Oh, trying to warm it up. Right.
So that we could get inside.
So the critters, the ones that you have there sort of most of the time and even through the winter, what are they?
Pretty much everything we try to keep over. If we can take good care of it, we try to keep it. And so everything that you would go in and see now is something that we had there over the
winter. So it would have been there in one tank or another.
And even though we're not open to visitors, we still have lots of school groups come through in the winter. So it's not like nobody gets to see these things in the wintertime. There are still tour groups and school groups coming through.
So how do you, when you need to collect organisms, how do you go about doing that? And are they all organisms from around here?
Definitely everything from around here. Usually we try to be, you know, hyper-local within 3 to 5 miles from here. I'd say most of it comes off of from within Fort Worden itself. 90% of the work that goes into collecting is getting the permits.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. So there's, I'm very glad that there is so much state oversight of this, because I don't want people irresponsibly taking animals either. And a lot of that also has to do with controlling the spread of invasive species. So because of that open system we talked about earlier, we have to be really aware of what we're bringing in, because those things just flow back out as well. And I know that a lot of your listeners have heard of things like the green crab problems.
Right.
And we, you know, it's really important. Our mission is conservation. And so it's really important to us that we not contribute to problems like that. So we're very careful with making sure that we collect things from the local area.
So do you have favorite critters in the aquarium?
Yes, yes. I definitely have favorites, and then sometimes my favorites turn on me. I adore our grunt sculpin. So sweet, a little shy, but just they're such bizarre-looking creatures, and if you don't know what it is, you just kind of have to Google it. It's
Yeah, you can't describe those guys.
Yeah, it's like an amalgam of different animals. It's very adorable.
And they are cute. I agree. They're very cute. So.
And I used to completely adore our scaled crab.
Scaled crab.
Yes, it was the first animal that I ever collected. So I think it was within a couple of weeks of starting to work at PTMSC, I went underneath to help our citizen science coordinator, Betsy, pull up a hydrophone that needed servicing. And so I went along with her to see what was under the pier. And this little crab was clinging to the line. A little itty-bitty juvenile crab with his shell was about the size of my pinky nail. And so I brought it back up to see what it was. And it just has done so well. It's I have lost track of how many molts that I have from this single crab. And it was always just this wonderful, beautiful, unique little crab. There's not that much about them in the books. And then it turned into a teenager, or terrible three, terrible twos, but they were threes or something. And it just started attacking everything. And this sweet little crab that the books describe as maybe eating brittle stars started eating fish and climbing tank walls to get into a better position to pinch large fish.
Large fish.
Taking down
fish
big
way
fish.
Bigger than itself.
And one of my favorite fish was the Cabazon, and I came in one morning, and this is what it is to be the mother, is when your favorite crab has your favorite fish, and all that's left of your favorite fish is now a head.
And the Cabazon is a big fish.
Well, I mean, they get to a meter long, but, you know.
This one was...
About 2 inches.
Oh, Marley, what about you?
I also have to agree with the grunt sculpin. That is definitely one of my favorites. I also am really a fan right now of the clingfish that are pretty quiet and shy in the aquarium as well. And if you don't know that they're there, you would never see them just by passing by the tank. But I just love how they can suction onto just about anything. And I figured out when trying to move one from one tank to its new home, just how strongly they can cling onto something.
So
and
it's
I was shocked.
The fins are modified to be like a sucker, right?
Mm-hmm. So its pectoral fins kind of form a little suction cup that it can stick really well onto rocks. And in our aquarium, they can also cling to the acrylic on the bottom of mm-hmm. the tank. And I was trying to move one and just couldn't do it. It didn't want to be moved, and I couldn't do it. And I just feel like I have a little bit of appreciation for those two funky fins. Yeah.
If a listener wants to come play with you in the aquarium, can they do that?
Well, yeah, anytime that we are open, people should come down and visit us. And then, like Marley and I are saying, some of our favorite animals are the ones that are maybe a little bit hard to discover. And that's where our really excellent volunteer docents or guides come into play. We have dedicated volunteers in the aquarium that spend a lot of time there. They get to know these fish, and they help our visitors see the beauty of things that mm-hmm. maybe aren't so apparent to them. Also the things that are apparent, and they have a great time getting to know the animals and getting to know the visitors and helping make that magical connection happen. And we are currently looking for some new volunteers.
So you need more volunteers, huh?
We do need more volunteers, especially upcoming in the summertime when we are open for more days. And we have some volunteer training happening in May. Really hope that some of your listeners will come down and join Marley and I in the aquarium.
Okay, so they should go to probably your website for more information.
Yes, they should go to www.ptmsc.org, or they can come by the aquarium and talk to either us or talk to one of the volunteers there and find out more what it's like to be a volunteer.
Well, Ali and Marley, this has been great fun. Thank you so much for coming in and taking us behind the scenes at the aquarium. And your stories are wonderful, too.
And I love it when you're behind the scenes at the aquarium, too. So I want to thank Nan for being one of our valuable volunteers behind the scenes
at
the aquarium.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, that was fun. Ali's always interesting to have in, and a good laugh is had by all.
I certainly enjoyed them.
That was Nora Petrick, our wonderful sound engineer, and Nora is going to help me share some of the upcoming events.
On Thursday, April 11th, Monica Fletcher, an excellent birder by ear, is leading an Admiralty Audubon spring migration walk at Fort Worden. Meet at Reveille Restaurant at 8:30 to listen for and watch some of the migrant birds that call our area their summer home.
And this coming weekend is the 16th annual Olympic Bird Fest, sponsored by the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society and the Jamestown Sklallam Tribe. The festival includes many field trip opportunities on land and on the sea, as well as presentations and workshops. Details about the Bird Fest can be found at www.olympicbirdfest.org.
Join the Olympic Peninsula chapter of the Native Plant Society on a field trip to Lyre Conservation Area on Friday, April 12th. Google Nature Plant Society of the Olympic Peninsula Chapter to get more information. On Saturday, April 13th, the Jefferson Land Trust Geology Group hosts a talk by Christina Heliker about her work at Mount St. Helens, which began shortly after the cataclysmic eruption on May 1980. Her talk will include an update on current conditions at Mount St. Helens, nearly 40 years after the big eruption. Check the Jefferson Land Trust Geology Group website for more information.
And on Saturday, April 13th and Sunday the 14th, Don't miss the annual Welcome the Whales Festival and Parade in Langley on Whidbey Island. This will honor and celebrate the arrival of the gray whales to Whidbey Island. There will be whale watching cruises, presentations, hands-on educational displays, a beach cleanup, costume making, face painting, children's activities, music, and celebration. Find out more on the Orca Network or the Langley Whale Center website.
Also, on Sunday, April 14th, join Admiralty Audubon volunteers to attack invasive plants and to pick up trash at the Katai Lagoon. You may want to take your work gloves. Check the Audubon Admiralty website for more information.
Interested in learning more about the flowers of the Olympic Peninsula? The Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society is offering a series of classes at the Dungeness River Audubon Center. The first class on April 16th includes a field trip to the Dungeness Forks and the Grey Wolf River Overlook. Pre-registration is required, so do go to the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society website for more information and to register.
On Tuesday, April 16th at the Port Townsend Community Center, the Native Plant Society hosts a talk on the role of American arboretums in the appreciation and conservation of native trees by Susan McDougall and David Beek. More details on the Olympic Peninsula chapter of the Native Plant Society website.
And on Wednesday evening, April the 17th, Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society presents a fun historical and biological special. Claire Manis will share her experience about mastodons and the scientific research about the interactions between mastodons and early humans in the Squim area over 13,000 years ago. The little historical note is that back in 1977, Claire's husband, Manny, in the Happy Valley area near Squim, discovered some old tusks while digging with a backhoe in his pasture. Visit the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society website for more information.
Lastly, even though every day is Earth Day, think about what you want to do to celebrate and help protect our home. There are a number of organized events being offered the weekend of April 20th on the Earth Day itself, Monday, April 22nd.
And we'll have more information about those next week. But before we leave, let's hear that mystery sound. That was the song of the white-crowned sparrow, a bird that looks just about like you would imagine it would look from that name. When I first began to learn bird songs, and I'm not really very good at it today at all, Monica Fletcher urged me to make up words for a little song that would help me remember. So my ditty for the white-crowned sparrow is, "Love me, pretty, pretty, please." Another often heard ditty used by bird watchers is, "See, see, pretty, pretty me." Listen for the song of the white-crowned sparrow all over Port Townsend. Once you recognize the song, you will hear it everywhere. So that's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. Thanks to our steadfast editing and sound engineering crew, Nora Petridge. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observations, or ideas. Email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at 12:05 p.m. on Wednesdays, with repeats here at KPTZ 91.9 FM Thursdays at 5:05 and Saturdays at 12:30. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening, and our closing music, The Age of Aquarius by the Fifth Dimension.